This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from the NBAA convention in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm with AOPA President Mark Baker, who is minute by minute watching the progress of the Pilots Bill of Rights 2 bill, which I guess we have some good news on in that it's gone through Senate favorably, not scheduled for a vote yet. So before we went onto recording here, I asked you about probabilities of passage, so let me get your view on that.
Well, Paul, thanks for asking that question. Well, one never absolutely knows until something's done and it's totally done. I do feel like we're on the one-yard line. We've had over 100,000 members supporting this thing, making noise to their congressmen and their senators, and they've listened. So, you know, by getting it through the markup committee with all kinds of different, you know, thoughts and amendments being proposed, and it's still hanging together as currently proposed, and standing by for its vote to get out of committee, I feel really good.
Let's summarize those two important amendments that I think one was passed and one was not passed. What significance do they have for the bill?
Well, I think if you're referring to the amendments that were primarily in the Manchin Amendment, which is kind of stayed together, it's the amount of look-back time, which we're still considering is a 10-year. So if you had a medical in the last 10 years, you're going to be good to go, special issuance or otherwise. So we think that's a really big part of getting the population back flying again and keeping flying.
Now, when you say that, the 10-year look-back is in place or not in place?
That is in place right now, yes, it is. Yeah, there was a couple of proposals to shorten that period of time and have other aeromedical information provided to your personal physician. Both of those did not pass.
Okay, so assuming that the bill gets out of the Senate in the shape that it's in now, goes to the House and looks about the same, what do you see as the overall significance here as far as pilots either staying in or coming back? If you look at it on paper, it sounds complex, but really isn't. I mean, conceptually, it's fairly clean in terms of pilots not needing a medical to continue flying. Tell me how you see the significance of it.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that people should be aware of. This will save the private pilots, the recreational pilots, and pilots flying under 6,000-pound airplanes, about $250 million over the next 10 years. And it's a lot of money. It gets saved for what we know is not a risk to safety. And we know that it's really, frankly, not a very good program. It's been out there since the 1920s. So getting maybe 20, 30, 40, as many as 50,000 people back flying and keeping a lot of other people that are perfectly capable of flying at a lower cost is what this is all about.
Do you have any data to show or to estimate how many people are kind of on the edge about medicals or are out, not getting a medical, because they're worried about failing it and losing their LSA privileges? Do you have any sense of those numbers?
It's really hard to get an absolute sense of what those numbers are. The best way to describe it is there's about 500,000 pilots out there in this country under age 75 that have had the opportunity to fly before and are not flying today. Now, some cases it's economics, some cases it's interest, some cases it's just not their thing anymore. But there's a big percentage of those that we've talked to regularly that find the cost of maintaining a medical and the fear of maintaining or getting a medical that might push them into a special issuance, which costs thousands of dollars a year, has kept them from flying.
So what kind of impact would you expect to see here? I mean, can you even predict that? In our audience, we hear a lot from potential pilots who say, hey, this thing will turn things around for me, but that could just be a very noisy, small minority.
No, I think from all the member engagement that we've had through our fly-ins and putting our Rusty Pilot programs together, which have been very successful, we do think there are thousands and thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of pilots that will get back in the game. This will be good for FBOs. It will be good for people pumping gas, people selling airplanes, because I do think this is the single biggest pop we're going to get general aviation for time to come.
Okay, so I'm not going to ask you about probability because your guess is as good as mine, but we'll transition into user fees here at NBAA. That has been an overriding theme. There are posters everywhere. Ed Boland talked about it yesterday. What's your view on where this is going to go?
Well, user fees have been proposed by just about every administration since the beginning of time, it seems like. And because of the strength of AOPA, NBA, and others working together, it has always been pushed back. And I expect it will be again proposed, and it will be pushed back. It is unacceptable to put another bureaucracy in place to collect fees from a time and distance or weight and distance from general aviation. And we just will come out firmly opposed to that. We've always made that clear to them. And I do think because we hang together as an aviation community, we'll win again.
Do you have a sense of what the attitude in the caucus is towards that?
Toward the user fees? You know, certainly Chairman Schuster of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee has led the idea that there may be some user fees on some segments of general aviation. We haven't seen the bill, nor has anybody else that I know of. So it'll be interesting to see what it is in the reactions from Congress on it. We don't think there's a lot of support for it, but I think what our view is, let's be open-minded if there's something that we should learn about air traffic control and how a privatized system should work. We just want to learn about it. Let's find out what's in the bill before we oppose it.
So then what are ALPA suggestions, if you have any, towards improving the reauthorization process? Because that's really the real reason this is happening.
Yeah, I do think that this reauthorization process, and, you know, over 20 extensions the last time, we're already on our first extension, and I'd be suspect if we don't get to several more extensions. You know, it just seems like the system is not working together to get to the long-term view. And I think that's an opportunity from a leadership all the way down to make sure we've got long-term thinking going on in the government today, not about two-week extensions and six-month extensions. There's just it's time for this Congress to come together and focus on what their real jobs are.
With the size of the GA caucus, and this is one of the largest GA caucuses, I think, in recent history, it seems like there would be some alignment there to make that happen. Do you sense that's going on?
I sense that we're back up to record numbers in the GA caucus, which is absolutely terrific. And so when it comes to the discussion around user fees, we've got great support to be heard and educate these people about what works and what doesn't work. So I think we can get that done. But it's just really frustrating that we continue to talk about what's broken at the FAA, and yet their budget at $15 billion is as high as it's ever been. Remember, we have 20% less flights than we did 20 years ago, and the budget's gone from $5 billion to $15 billion. So I don't think it's a funding problem. And yet it's going to be a directional issue, saying maybe they do need to be thinking about years out further and giving them some planning authority to do that. So there could be some ways to change the system instead of doing these annual appropriations for the FAA so they can do their job a little better. Our air traffic control system is the best in the world. Everybody says it. I fly a lot in it. It works really well. So don't fix what isn't broken is my biggest concern.
Last question, back to user fees. You went off to Canada and looked at the Canadian system, which I think we assume in the U.S. works, but maybe doesn't work so well. But what were your impressions of it, and could it apply in the U.S.?
Well, yeah, I certainly visited and have a great deal of respect for NAV Canada. They do a nice job in a very small world. I mean, they don't have nearly as many airports, nearly as many transportation movements, either commercially or privately. And so it is a different system. You know, as a flyer into Canada personally, I get really frustrated with getting these bills in Canadian dollars months and months and months after the effect. And so their system may work for them, but I'm not certain it's a model for us.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Mark.
Thanks, Paul.
We've been speaking with Mark Baker, president of AOPA. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from NBAA in Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.